Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at katherinedebruin.com, katherinedebruin.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, to the next episode of the Family Express podcast with Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans. I'm so excited for our guest speaker today and our conversation centered around family systems work, family therapy, and play therapy. Our guest today is Liliana Bailan, a licensed marriage and family therapist and play therapy supervisor, as is Catherine, who is also a play therapy supervisor. So I think I'm going to just welcome you, Liliana, and say thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me back.
Awesome. And let's just get the conversation rolling. So let's talk about why play therapy. Why is it important? You are both play therapy supervisors. And why do we need this? Why do clinicians need to know about play therapy?
Why does play even exist in the world? What is the point of playing? How does that help development, and why is that an essential part of our lives, even though we're adults, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, think about since your baby was born, or think about just any baby, the first thing they would do is introduce them to toys in order to start a dialogue, to introduce objects, to introduce colors. It is through toys, actually, that we learn about the world. How about just starting with that?
With the beauty of toys, the fun of toys, and the fact, though, that you can be a toy, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking of even playing peekaboo with my baby when she was, like, in my arms, right? So that concept of play and stimuli. And as you say that, Liliana, talking about toys, mm-hmm. like, when I think about kids, I think what is important to a child other than, you know, mm-hmm. like a stable family, like a safe place to live, etc. Mm-hmm. Kids like games and fun and play. Mm-hmm. This is just what's important to them. It's fun. Games are fun. Play is fun. So you want to enter the world of a child, enter the world of play, fun, and games.
Yeah.
As a way to connect.
And it's through play, right? Children, we know, research has taught us that children communicate and express using their body, and that's how they play. They don't use it through words. They need us adults to organize it in order to have a vocabulary around it. So even emotional intelligence, they need adults to co-regulate and be able to name, this is what I'm feeling, and this is a space that I have in order to share this with you. But it's through their body that they communicate with us.
Yeah. They're less likely going to communicate verbally, and they don't have that kind of abstract thinking. Like, I always I kind of giggle a little bit when I, as a parent, lean down and talk to my 2 or 3 or 4 year old who's tantruming and say, I find myself saying, just use your words. Just use your words. What's going on? And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm just going to get stuck every time, because as much as they'd love to tell me what's going on, they don't know. They can't make sense of that yet in a 2, 3, 4 year old brain. But does that mean they can't tell me what's going on? Actually, they can. But they can show me through their body. They can show me by playing. They can literally play the exact scenario mm-hmm. through games and toys. And then I can know what's going on.
For our listeners who are not watching us, the three of us smile when we... because we're like, yeah, they're not gonna tell us in every mother, every caretaker, anyone who's been involved with children will say, like, can you just tell me? And they won't. So it's a universal need that we have as adults, right? But know that they can. Dan Siegel has been a force telling us that when we're dysregulated, we don't have access to that part of the brain that is able to have logic and be able to say, mother, I had a hard day today. Johnny did not share his toy and I had it. Like, it's just not going to happen. But they can come and scream and pull and cry and pull you in. And that is the way of saying, I need help. And I do not know how to communicate this, which is no different than having a teenager who they come home and you're like, how was your day? Nothing. And they walk away and they shut the door.
Yeah.
Right. And if you say, can you just share with me? And they're like, leave me alone. It's still in their bodies, right? And the three of us can smile because we have this shared experience with caretakers when they come into a family session and they say, they don't tell me what's going on. I do not know how to help. And it's not until we remind them the simple way of just going to the floor, either carpet, whatever you have, but going into the floor and can we just play a game? And it's through the play that we can start having a conversation. We as adults want their kids to come into our world and tell us so that we can problem solve.
Yeah.
Right. And children, they, of course, they want to problem solve, but they're interested in, can you come into my world so that you can see and you can feel what it's like to be me? And can you help me make sense of this in order for me to know how to respond?
Yeah. So you're saying whether it's meeting with families in a therapeutic environment, mm-hmm. or even families just at home, like wanting to have family discussions, if we can somehow meet children, especially younger children, in that area of games, fun, and play, mm-hmm. there's an open channel towards more communication. But yes. we've kind of got to join them in that, the nonverbal communication space, mm-hmm. in a world that makes more sense for them, where they're likely to start being open and more free. Mm-hmm. And then we can get the information we're needing or have the conversation we want to.
Right. Yeah. And even having those difficult conversations. So when we were starting, Catherine, right, I was talking about the video that you show in the webinar that you had, and you were playing peekaboo. And it was so beautiful. And even when you were playing hot potato and you were doing it through the light switch. And I was like, oh my God, that is so genius. Cause they were like, am I getting close? And the child will turn off the lights on or off. Right. And like they started doing it.
Yeah,
I was like, genius. Now you show the parents a different way the child can communicate.
So just for our listeners who maybe weren't at that webinar, this was working with a child who I needed some important information from, but he was not giving it verbally. And so I made a game of, well, let the light talk to me. And when he switched the light on, it meant yes. And the light off, it meant no. Mm-hmm. And we ended up making a whole game out of that. But you just mentioned something called hot potato. Can you define what that is? Because that could be a fun game for us to include in our lives.
Mm-hmm. So hot potato, I was like, wait a minute, you play hot potato in that video. But hot potato is a game where we can throw any object. We throw it. And then when you catch it, you have to disclose something. Or you're getting warmer, or it's usually like you disclose something because you catch it. You have to share something, whatever it is. And then like you throw it back and the other person who catch it, at the end is whoever catches it. They have to either add something to the conversation, share something to the conversation, or show something in the conversation and that we're having. So that's really helpful in family sessions, especially when you're working with teens, that they really don't know if I can share this with you. In family therapy, it is helpful because the therapist is there as a facilitating conversations and helping guiding parents in regards to, are you listening to what your teen is sharing with you? Because a lot of times, again, we are so fearful of that we don't tend to listen to the child. So hot potato is one of those examples.
Can you give, sorry, I'm slowing you down a bit, Liliana. It's just such a cool idea. But can you give an example of a question you might ask before you throw the potato or the ball or the pillow? Like, what's an example at in a family could use at home, mm-hmm. or even in a therapy session? What do you often ask?
My mind just went blank. I was trying to remember the kiddo that I saw on your video, but it can be anything. It can be, I was trying to remember the kiddo that you were using, the body. Let's use it into that. Remember in a video where you were showing the family and they were like elevating their feet for
you? Oh, I said, oh, yes. How much are we talking about mom? Are we talking about enough or too much or too little?
Mm-hmm. You can get the object and throw it out, and whoever catches, they can share in that moment. Too much, not enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so that can be
something. You could say something like, who in this family is the funniest? Who in mm-hmm. this family gets the angriest?
Mm-hmm.
Throw the ball to that person right now.
Yes.
Something like that.
Totally do that.
Or everyone shares what makes them the most stressed. When you catch the ball, it's your turn to share.
Yes.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised. Some kids are going to be like, I'm not catching it.
Oh, yeah.
And they pull their arms back and they don't want to catch it.
Okay. Oh, and then we have a new whole discussion about we don't like anger or I don't feel angry. Do others agree? Like,
What is it to get angry? Yeah, you can say that. You're like, oh, we were not sure that we want to answer that. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
You can go pick it up. Like, okay, let's try it again. The idea is to make it playful, to show a different way of having conversations within the family. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So these are some examples of family play therapy activities that we can use as an intervention or assessment. Mm-hmm. In order for us to know where we can go or what we need to do more of.
And would you say it's a way of titrating things a little bit? It makes it, when you make it more playful, it makes it less intense emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so there's maybe just more freedom to put out information and it doesn't feel emotionally as intense. And so it's just easier to share.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's say if I was having a kid who is 5, I may want to play a game that is easier, but with the focus of either sharing. Let's say if the family came in because the siblings are not sharing or the child does not want to take turns, then think of a game that you can use where you are forced to take turns.
Mm-hmm.
Candyland. Maybe you lose. You win, you lose, you have to go back. That may be a perfect game where we are playing. We have the activity. We have the goal of taking turns. We have the goal of winning and losing. And we can add conversation to it.
And so you're saying, like, who doesn't want to play Candyland? So you put the game out. Everyone wants to be a part of it. And so there's less likely to be resistance about then taking a turn that happens to involve sharing some important information. So it's almost a way to kind of distract a little bit to reduce the risk a little bit, like to put a little incentive next to the risk of sharing, make it a bit safer to risk, I suppose.
So it's not me sharing. We are playing while we're sharing. Think about how many times, right? Go ahead.
What I was just noticing on your face, as you said, we're playing. Like suddenly you're focusing on the game and you're moving your piece. And so it also reduces the intensity of just sitting and staring at each other and then having to share something big and emotional.
That's exactly it.
Makes it easier and more fun. It inoculates the hard work of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
So there's many interventions that we can use. Let's say that in EFFT, we're trying to focus on emotional connection and attachment. So when you go to Target, please do not go spend a lot of money. But when you go to Target and you're walking through, because we don't have Toys R Us. Very few states have Toys R Us now.
We don't have it anymore. Yeah. This is a big shopping thing in the USA for our international listeners. Yeah. Toys R Us.
Yeah. Because internationally, we can go into, are we playing soccer? Are we playing, like there's other things that we use when we don't use a lot of toys. During FIFA last year, everyone outside the US who knows what soccer is or football is because of FIFA, they were showing you kids in other countries playing soccer without a soccer ball. and we will think that we need a sucker, and they were communicating, speaking different languages, and they were like smiling and tracking each other without actually talking. That is beautiful. So you actually don't need a toy to have conversation, to lean in, to track, to do everything that we do. But if you were, let's say, walking to Target and you see all these board games, you don't have to spend a lot of money, first of all. But the invitation by me naming that is, when you're looking at the game, can you start thinking, how will I use this to facilitate a conversation in a family session?
Okay, wait, that's good. That's good. So think of like games that you love, mm-hmm. and then think, okay, how could I utilize this for a family session? Do you know what I love about that, Liliana? Is I feel like a lot of parents or even therapists might put pressure on themselves to become playful. Yeah. And honestly, some people are just hell of a playful and some people aren't. Mm-hmm. And I always want to say to parents, find a way to play with your kid, but make it easy. So yes. What do you like doing? And if you love doing it and you sit down with your kid, they're probably going to love doing it with you because you love doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go out and learn 125 different games. Like, just come to yourself and say, hey, do I play? What do I think is a lot of fun? And then how fun would that be to try play this with my kid? And then how could I make this a conversation starter?
Yeah. This weekend I was visiting my son and I took a board game, and it's called Sabo. It's a Spanish joke. When you move to the US and we lose our language, we don't say the proper vocabulary anymore. So this is like I know, but in Spanish will be sabo. And we started playing. I have played this with my nephews who are teenagers. And I have played this with my family. And it turned into this whole dialogue of the language that we're losing, how we make up words as we go when we're frustrated. I did not know that. All of a sudden, like, oh, we're team because we're winning. Like, it turned into this whole activity. And part of it is because, first of all, in the US, they learn Spanish from Spain. So the Spanish that I speak is completely different. So it's even having a conversation of traditions and dialogue, right? So that I had to go, and I think that game, I bought it for $15. We already played it many times that we know all the words, but the idea was, how do we talk about what we're losing and how can we do it in a playful way? When I played it with my nephews and my nieces, they started like sharing more. My sister and I just turned around and we're like, just keep it going. And with my kids, it's more like, I took college Spanish in high school and I never learned this. So we started like laughing. It was like memory making. It was relational. It was attachment. Yeah. All these things that as a parent, you will not know that you're doing this. As a therapist, who's the parent? Mm-hmm. I'm making all these connections, right? So there's too many games that you can do. Monopoly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Life, if you have older kids, if you have younger kids, you can play with blocks, you can play with cars, you can play with soldiers according to their age. If you want to specifically work in the therapy session in regards to emotion recognition, you go get the figurines of Inside Out 1 or 2.
Yeah.
You can make a whole game of it.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute. So I like how you're saying that game, Sabu, like was really about like identity development and honoring the history and then tradition and then talking about change and loss. And is that a game that people who are not Spanish could play, or we'd look for something alternative?
Look for something alternative. I have been very vocal. I tend to with Latino families. So Spanish is the language that I tend to work with. So a lot of the games I come and I try it with my family so that it makes sense before I take them to therapy.
Yeah. Okay. For our Spanish listeners, then that sounds like a pretty special
game. But there's other games that we can go and find out. You can make your own cards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. But the idea is, as we were sharing in the free webinar that you did, you don't have to be a play therapist.
Yeah.
To integrate play therapy interventions.
Right, right.
But our recommendation is if you're going to add play therapy interventions, you do have to know why you're adding them and how they're going to add to the family therapy intervention that you're already using.
Yeah.
Let's pause for a brief break. Listeners, we'll be back.
Listeners, check out our book for children, children of any age. It's called A Jumble of Thoughts and a Tangle of Feelings. It's on Amazon.com. If you know a child out there who is having a tough time but unable to put that stress into words, this book is your guide to helping them figure out what is going on. Whether you're an educator, a therapist, or a parent, we really think this will be a helpful guide for you.
This book was so fun to be a part of, and we are excited to pass it from our hands to yours. So when you leave us a podcast review, you'll get one entry to get a free copy of our book, A Jumble of Thoughts, A Tangle of Feelings, inspired by emotionally focused therapy. We'll announce the winner on social media platforms and on a future episode. We really appreciate your support. Before you know it, a copy of the book could be on your doorstep.
Rhonda, do you use any kind of play with your families, and do you have a favorite game or way of doing that?
Not right now. I don't have families who have kids under 12 right now. My original training was in play therapy. So when I was an associate, when I was an intern in practicum, my first, I don't know how many years of being licensed, I was like the play therapist, the family therapist at the agency I was at. I just think there's such a value in that. I just support promoting integrating it in with family work whenever it's appropriate.
Yeah. I think with play therapists, it's obviously pretty easy because you've probably got a room full of toys and you know a lot of these games. Yesterday, I did a first family session, and I had parents and a 4 and a 6-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to think specifically, imagine if I was not a play therapist, how would I do this session? I just challenged myself, and I actually didn't do it in my regular playroom. I did also want to go to just more like an adult therapy room, because I felt with the 4 and 6-year-old that if I were in my play therapy room, which is so much fun, I would actually lose them a little bit to a family conversation. So I kind of tested it out and thought, I'm going to pull them into an adult therapy room and start it as a conversation and just see how far can I go? Where do we get stuck? And then I pulled in some play stuff to have so I was thinking about like, what should I pull in? So what I brought in was, and I'm really curious to know what each of you would do, because I'm thinking of our listeners out there who are maybe doing family sessions, but they're learning how to bring play in. Because there's a lot of people also in the EFFT world who are now working with teens or adults, mm-hmm. but are kind of nervous, right, when it comes to bringing in kiddos. So I took in some paper and some pencils. I was going to do markers, and then I was like, that's a good idea with these couches. So I did markers, and the way that I would have used that, I didn't get around to using it, but it would be very quick if things got out of control or if the kids were too quiet to go to some kind of a drawing activity. And then the other thing I brought in was a bucket full of puppets, that each of the puppets is very congruent and represents something like very obviously like anger or assertiveness and being wise, and the turtle who crawls into the shell. So I've got like 5 or 6 of those, and I thought I could easily bring those out. And the way I would use it would be if the family didn't want to act something out, like the negative pattern, I could say like, who in the family is most like this puppet or this puppet, like who gets sad, who gets angry, then what does so-and-so do? So that's how I was going to use those two. But I'm curious, like, if you had to have like 1 or 2 or 3 essential things for a session like that, what would you pick? And I usually love my sand tray, because who doesn't want to go pick an item and put it in the sand tray? But I also have been feeling like the sand, not only does it get messy, but it's almost like I can lose the family into the sand, like it becomes another whole thing. So I stay away from that. But what do you think?
Well, first of all, if you have a sand tray, go to the dollar store and get a shower curtain. You put it under, so any sand that overflows, like, you still catch it.
Nice. Thank you.
I love the assessment that you were talking. Literally, you took them so mindful. You took them to the adult room and assess what was it that you're going to be able to do, thinking already of expressive arts and bringing paper and colors. Nice catch on the markers. For anyone who's listening there, if you have 4, 5, 6 years old, they're going to go wild. So think about those things. And then it's a non-directive approach, which is, let's see what happens. Let's see who takes the lead. I may be curious and drop something, and let's see what they do with it. That's an assessment that we're doing in a family session to see who's going to take over, who's going to be sitting next to who. Are they going to communicate? Are they going to withdraw, shut down? Like, what is it? That's an assessment session. Rhonda, what do you think?
I'm all good with that. Brilliant. What else? Keep going, because I really want to know what else you
say. So you're saying, Liliana, yeah, you're right. Like, part of that was just to see, can this family with a 4 and a 6 year old, can they sit and chat about feelings? Are they comfortable with this? Do they have the vocabulary? Mm-hmm. And if they weren't at all, I might go into my playroom and then just do an observational playtime and just witness the family together, right? Mm-hmm. Or move over to some of my more specific assessments that I've been trained in.
Mm-hmm.
But you can always just sit with a family like that and see what happens. How out of control does it get? How organized is it? What happens? How do the other thing I was thinking of watching is, as we're talking in a family about certain topics, mm-hmm. what's the arousal level of the children? When do they start getting super aroused? And you could easily just watch that across the session and see which topics bring stress. Which mm-hmm. topics calm down?
And you get to see, are the parents are able to watch for those cues and they move to co-regulation, or they stay away because their capacity is so low that they also get overwhelmed.
Right.
You get to see that as well. So having Play-Doh with that age is really important because it's tactile.
Yeah.
So they can regulate with it. If you have those fancy smells, is not only tactile, but you can also smell. So that's two sensory things that you can use right there.
The Play-Doh that's scented, or that you get pencils that are like that as well, right?
Yeah.
That's nice. And then I think you're talking about the tactile stuff, like I do have a little basket of fidgets.
Mm-hmm.
That is supremely helpful for any age, actually.
Yeah.
That's an easy thing for us to collect. Like, it's just a couple different fidget toys.
And you have to be aware of the fidgets, right? Like, what is the purpose? But yeah, I'm also an advocate for, it doesn't matter the age. You should have a basket with paper, colors, Play-Doh, and any fidgets that help you with tactile to help you regulate in the session. I think it's really helpful, because we even have adults who need that when they're talking or they're sharing with you hard stuff.
Yeah.
That's the way of any tactile.
But I think I'm getting what you were saying earlier, Liliana, which is when you are bringing in a thing, a game, an activity like that, it is helpful also to have the list of what you're going to put in your notes. Like, how is that benefiting treatment, right? So, for instance, like with something tactile or a fidget toy,
mm-hmm.
I feel like you could just run through a bit some of the benefits.
Yeah, because you're talking about, in the session, we were focusing on co-regulation. We were coaching parent and child how to utilize, let's say, the Play-Doh which is a tactile, in order to just spend a couple of minutes. And that's the press. Is it soft? Is it hard? They don't have to talk. You can name it. Is it cold? Is it hot? Like, they can do so many things in order to bring awareness of what they're doing in the present moment, mm-hmm. while we're regulating.
Gotcha. Right,
so that session may be just focusing on co-regulation.
Yeah.
Right. Good. So it's like so many things. So in play therapy, or if you ever, again, you're going to be doing a training on this, but in play therapy, we're thinking, what are the themes that come up? Is it a lot of chaotic? Chaos, is it good versus bad? And those are all themes that if you Google them, if you put play therapy and play themes, they will come up.
That's nice. Yeah.
And then, so there are specific themes. I can go look them up and share them with you if you want to share them with the listeners. So it's something that you can, so you become aware. And EFFT, let's say if we're focusing on, there's a lot of anxiety in the room. The child is having a hard time sleeping in their bed. And that is impacting the couple, the family, because they're not resting. So therefore, how is it that we're going to help the family with a toy, bringing anxiety into the room so that we can co-regulate and show a different way of how do we do this as a family at home? But they have to have the shared experience of trying it at the office in order to feel comfortable trying it at home.
Yeah, that's true. It's helpful to play it there first, demonstrate it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, we were going, I think in play therapy, we can go on and on and on. I think that one, the same way that we go to take trainings, advanced trainings in EFFT, we should do that also include like just play therapy sessions. The idea that just because a child can can share with you doesn't mean that they are able to or they have the capacity all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it could be as simple as having a feeling chart, mm-hmm. right? People could point to, or drawing one out, a scale, like a thermometer that runs from 0 to 10 that they can color in different ways.
And it's so much better, actually, if you have in a whole sheet, like an angry face. And mm-hmm. then like you put it as a therapist, you put it in front, like, what about this one? So if mm-hmm. you make it playful, like the child will be able to engage with you more, relax yeah. in order to yeah. do that. Yeah. If you just do like point, there's a... Can you feel the difference between me saying like, is this happy versus like point to happy? Like there's
Yeah. It's got to, we can really be playful as well as have a couple of toys or things that we use. And you're saying in the world of play therapy, there are a lot of trainings that just talk about interventions where, or you could pick up a book and get an idea of 25 different interventions.
Honestly, if you Google play therapy interventions and PDF.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. You'll have more than you can handle. Probably just need to have a couple of these that we get comfortable with. So, yeah, we want to encourage you out there, listeners, parents, to find something that you can be playful with and then to think of how you can use that to communicate better and to bring therapeutic value to your relationship with a kid. Liliana, you did mention that we are doing a play therapy supervision group for people working with families. So we've got that coming up if you're interested. And then I have a specialty training on utilizing play activities if you're working with families mm-hmm. in treatment.
And as we're going, what I will end up is all of you who are caretakers, remember the time that you had this family night with your family and you play a game or watch a movie and the whole idea where you guys were together and sharing something. That's what we want to recreate over and over again in order to have those difficult conversations and learn those physical cues in order to give us information when our child is starting to get dysregulated and how we can bring them back.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Catherine and Liliana. It's just a joy to be able to sit back and watch you two get into it and you know, talk shop. I think that's a real special thing when you've got two people who really know what they're talking about and can really, I think, inspire others to to dip their toe into some family work with younger kids and how to incorporate play therapy as a way to, as a catalyst to helping those conversations happen between families. Thank you both so much for your expertise and your wisdom. And like they said, they are, Catherine and Liliana are hosting or starting a supervision group for EFFT with play therapy that starts in October. And then Catherine.
Actually, December. We moved.
That starts in December. In December. And then Catherine does have her specialty training coming up in November, I believe.
Yes, correct.
Awesome. And thank you so much, you two.
Thank you. Have fun playing, everybody. Thanks, Liliana. Thanks, Rhonda.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.